97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
So, you know, I think I've said this to you. I'm very proud of the caliber of guests that we have on this show.
You should be.
I've been on this radio station for 3 years, but I was on KMOX for, you know, 15 or 16 years at WTMJ in Milwaukee before that. So, you know, the host has some chops, but I'm really, you know, very blessed to have lots of great guests. And I bring it up because we're at that point where producer extraordinaire and the Hall of Famer Fred Bottomer and I are looking at this thing. It's 2 weeks from Election Day, yeah. Right? I've got Friday and Monday off going to visit the grandbaby in Houston. We want to make sure that we talk to some of these awesome guests that we have on a regular basis at least one more time before the election. And this is a perfect example this afternoon. Azra Namani, who has been on many, many times before, senior fellow at the Independent Women's Network. She is a fighter out there for great causes and is, you know, I think pretty passionate, Azra, it's fair to say. That might be an understatement, right? How are you this afternoon?
Oh, my God. I am so fired up right now. I'm so excited to talk to you.
Yes, give me the breaking news. Fred told me there's some news from Virginia, right?
All right. So, go back to the summer of 2020. It is a summer of racial reckoning. And across the country, you know, things are turning upside down for our schools. Kids are locked away from the classroom because of COVID. And this is when the school boards start going crazy.
That's right.
And here in Northern Virginia, the school board and the principal at my son's high school, the school called Thomas Jefferson High School for Science and Technology, decided that they were going to use this year of upheaval to eliminate the merit-based admissions to the number one high school in America. We, the parents, the Asian parents that are mostly in the school, 70% Asian, we fought back, and I wrote articles about this, started talking on radio, and started exposing this issue, and the parents went to the sidewalk in front of the school and became one of the first protests that became our parent revolution nationwide. Well, we couldn't get the school board, of course, like most school boards, to listen to us. They rammed the new policy through. We won a federal court decision with legal representation by this place called Pacific Legal Foundation. What were we doing? We were pushing back against this new race-based craziness that was happening in America. Well, just now, moments ago, we learned that the principal, Anne Bonitatibus, resigned because we just exposed the fact that the number one high school in America has fallen in the rankings to number 14. And why does it matter to everyone from St. Louis to across the country? Because when our educational system plummets, we as a nation plummet. Our kids plummet. And so we, the parents, stood up against these kind of educrats like this principal. And I'm so excited. The excitement you can hear in my voice is because, ding dong, the witch is dead, so to speak.
That's great. Well, that is great news.
Unbelievable.
You know,
we hardly ever get to fight back against these bureaucrats, and, you know, they keep doing what they're doing.
Well, that's how you got on my radar. Look, when you were doing these, you know, fights 3 years ago, that's how I think I noticed you. And,
yes.
And there were several others out there that were fighting the good fight. And then we, you know, got to 2022 and, you know, the victories not as wide as we had hoped in the midterm elections. But look, you've been fighting for a lot of these causes. I just spent a segment talking about this New York Times piece on DEI. Did you read that, Azra, by any chance?
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
Unbelievable.
It's like, I read it and I'm like, oh, the New York Times says it's true, so it's true. But meanwhile, people of common sense have been saying it for 4 years.
Yeah,
and what have we been echoing? But not, we've only simply been echoing, you know, from the conservative to the classic liberals like me, we have been repeating the words of Martin Luther King. Evaluate children by the content of their character, not the color of their skin. And now the New York Times, oh, they got the memo. Okay, great.
It's unbelievable. But, I mean, I give them credit, and that's really detailed, in-depth reporting, and I highly recommend it. So, classic liberal. I always call you like one of my former favorite reform liberals with Batya as well. Why is someone like you supporting Donald Trump? Now, I want to go to your Twitter because there was someone that tweeted out to you. This woman, Azra Namani, a Muslim woman, is someone I'm proud to know. I owe her an apology. I condemned her when she publicly supported Trump in 2020. I understand now why she did that and that I didn't understand at the time. So maybe put that into further context and make some calls here on what's going to happen in a couple of weeks, Azra.
Wow. So this was remarkable. And this is what I have heard from people. This happened to be a Twitter person who is Jewish American. And it says that, you know, this user is not going to be voting for Donald Trump, but sees why people are voting for Donald Trump. And that's why back in 2016, I wrote a column in the Washington Post. Now I only know that they published it to make fun of me. But nonetheless, I wrote it about how it is that I voted for Donald Trump in 2016 as an immigrant, a quote, woman of color, as a, Democrat all my life, and I gave all the policy reasons, and I wrote it on the day after the election because I wanted the vilification of the Trump voter to stop. I just heard Van Jones, you know, another one of those pundits that once he declares it's true, it's true. I'd heard him say that it was a white lash that elected Donald Trump in 2016, and I knew that was not the case, and I knew it wasn't just a bunch of racists, you know, hillbillies, like they always try to argue the Trump voter is described to be. And so it didn't matter, right? The demonization began. It continues to this day. But this Jewish American has come to see, you know, the limitations and the hijacking of the Democratic Party by the far left. Even the Democratic leadership seems to have seen, you know, that doesn't play so well among independents especially. And what do I predict? I mean, my prediction is that Donald Trump will win by perhaps a percentage or two, and this will lead to this great resistance 2.0 that was unleashed against him in 2016, and it's going to go to court because lawyers like a man named Mark Elias is already creating the legal warfare that they're going to be unleashing. I can see it. I've traveled and done reporting from Springfield, Ohio, which has made headlines in recent days, you know, to Virginia, and there's Trump signs everywhere. You know, they're in the, quote, flyover country, and as there might be very well, you know, in neighborhoods throughout the rest of America that show that kind of dominate.
By the way, even in the city of St. Louis, there's a few Trump signs, a few more than you might think here.
Yeah, that's what I'm seeing. That's what I'm noticing is in, like, even in Northern Virginia, in classic Democratic neighborhoods, you're seeing half and half now, which is shocking.
But what you're also seeing, you know, I want you to address this because you go back to 2016, you might have been a little ahead of the curve here when it comes to people of color. You look at these numbers. CNN had this segment yesterday. I played some of the audio with this Harry Enten guy, and he's talking about the dwindling support of African-American men in particular. You go from Obama to Kamala Harris, who claims that she's African-American, so that's interesting. I mean, I've said this to simplify it. There's a lot of black women and men and Hispanic men and women. They don't like her. They just don't like her.
Yeah, that's
trust
the thing.
Her.
The thing is about being a journalist, as you know very well, is we are, you know, our business is predictive analysis, right? Like, we are always seeing what is new and what is coming. And that is why I wrote, you know, what I did in 2016, because I saw the seismic shift in politically happening, not only in my life, but in the life of many people that I was around. And I saw that increase in 2020 with the pandemic and the backlash that parents were feeling against their parenting. And we know that shift to the far left has continued in the Democratic Party. And it's just not the tenor, it's not the spirit with which most Americans want to live. And I know this as a girl that grew up in Morgantown, West Virginia, you know, under Senator Robert Byrd, Democratic politics. And when he negotiated with Bob Dole, you know, as a Republican, and it was a different time. And I think that's where most people sit. Honestly, they don't want to be fighting with their neighbors. They don't want to cut off family members because of their politics. And so this marginalization that's been happening in politics of people is something that most of us reject.
It's sad. And it's really, it's unfortunate. So I want to ask you before I let you go, because I did see some stuff on Twitter, and I'm glad you reminded me. What did you discover in Springfield, Ohio, Azra?
Oh, my gosh. So I chased cats and dogs, like every other journalist in the country. But what I found were coyotes, human coyotes. And these are the people that have been you know, understood in this new economy that we have as human traffickers. And what I discovered there was there is staffing agency called First Diversity that is allegedly involved in this business, big business of trafficking people, in this case in Springfield, from Florida to Springfield, Ohio, for jobs. The city commissioners were warned as far back as 2019 by a former First Diversity employee that this is a problem, that there was shady business happening. The Chamber of Commerce president was warned, but nobody did anything. And in the name of politics, then the story exploded, and former President Trump, of course, amplified it at the debate. And in his typical hyperbole, you know, drew attention to Springfield, Ohio. I love cats and dogs. I've had them. They're my beloved to me. And I couldn't find evidence of the allegation. But what I did discover is very troubling. And I think that's ultimately the story of exploitation of people is concerning us all across the country, right, from Aurora, Colorado to Springfield and New York City. So it's that economic phenomena that's turning so many small towns upside down. And what I discovered is that, you know, this is a very complicated story that we've got to manage and solve. I know it's happening in Missouri. I know it's happening all over the country, and we're not handling it properly in immigration or economic policies. And so I'm going to keep reporting it. I've got so many sources now in Ohio. I'm going to follow the money until we figure out exactly how greed and alleged corruption is, you know, turning our communities upside down.
Well, J.D. Vance handled all that so well. And, you know, everybody got distracted by their eating the cats and dogs. And I think we appreciated the TikTok versions that went around. But what was lost in that, and I think this is still lost on much of the left, Azra, is the impact that the invasion at the border has cost people all around the country, whether it's migrant crime, whether it's fentanyl, whether it's people in Chicago or Boston, or as you indicated in Aurora, Colorado, just looking at the resources that they've paid for with that, their tax dollars going to people who did not come here legally, didn't go through the process. We get that they want to, you know, go down the path of the American dream. I think we all can have empathy and appreciation for that, but at what cost?
Yeah, and it's a cost to them,
yes,
too. Like, there's two casualties that I found in Springfield, and one was the local people, much like the folks in my hometown of Morgantown, West Virginia, who have inherited, you know, stories of immigration struggle. They were Irish, Italian immigrants who came, worked the plants, like folks in West Virginia worked the coal mines. They were working for the company man. They were working for the company store. They were living in the company house. And alas, in the 21st century, these dynamics of exploitation continue to this day. One smart journalist there in Ohio calls it reverse offshoring. So we are bringing into our country low-wage workers who then get exploited in a way that our country rejected. You know, I watch Newsies. You know, many people, the stories of the child labor that sold newspapers at corners. And, you know, we know that story of exploitation. And wherever you fall on the political spectrum, like whether you're pro-union or against unions or pro-minimum wage or not, like we all, like there's no person, especially in struggle, I have found that ever believes in exploitation. You know, no person.
I agree with that. Right.
Right.
Well,
right?
Maybe the so-called real journalists out there would be better served, because the only thing that you hear from most of the people in the left wing and the legacy media, whether it's CNN or elsewhere, is they always, they have their talking points very organized, but they always want to bring up how it seems like if we crack down on illegal migration, we will have nobody to work in hotels or restaurants. That's the way they position this, that every person that's working, you know, every Hispanic person, by the way, I'd be offended if I'm a Hispanic person, right? Because they're basically telling everyone that anyone that's here working these jobs is not here legally, which is not the case.
Yeah, and what is so sad is that this propaganda against the local people was really hurtful. You know, this is a city, Springfield, where you can see the glaze over people's eyes from years of drug addiction now. You know, that was also the product of corruption, right? Like the way it was funneled into our vulnerable communities from West Virginia to Missouri and beyond. And you can see the living conditions. I mean, you guys know, like in the inner city, St. Louis or other communities, like I went to Ferguson, you know, I know like where poverty is. I've been in White Appalachia, you know, and it is so sad, but there is something just so unbelievable happening in Ferguson. They told me not to go to the low cost gas station. So of course I went there every day. And you see lost lives, and those
in Springfield, you mean
help.
In Springfield?
Yeah,
Yeah.
Oh, and they need help. And the thing that happens in these economies of exploitation, I can tell you exactly because I talked to a young man, Chris. He's a truck driver now. He went and worked at the Dole plant that's at the corner at an edge of town. He couldn't like. First of all, like there was nobody English speaking around him. Second of all, it is 30 degrees, 40 degrees in there. The Dole company does not give anybody additional supplies. They come in with their own thermal underwear, their winter coats to try to work. And then they're bagging the salad that we buy in grocery stores that's bagged, you know. And he quit after a day because he knew, like, that those working conditions, it wasn't that he's lazy. Like, that guy, he's, like, working across the Midwest now as a truck driver. But, like, he knew that, like, this was exploitation. And then these guys also, they don't get paid their full hours. They don't get paid their overtime completely. And, like, English-speaking, quote, white people, like, as they tried to brand the people of Springfield, though there's many people of many ethnicities, they know their rights. To some extent, like we still have exploitation of all people. And so they say no. And then they go after another vulnerable class. And that's the dynamics that has happened that leads to them saying, well, the Haitians will work. They show up. Well,
Choice. I gotcha. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So well, it's really unfair.
It is, and it's complicated. And there's obviously the election and everything that's happening with the election probably doesn't help anyone in that circumstance. Osra, you're a hero. I love what you're doing out there on the Twitter. And I've seen you on Fox recently. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Keep up the fight. And thanks for the breaking news on the principal. Also, that was great news.
Yes. Yes. I want everyone to know that if you stand up and speak up, you'll see the change you want.
It might take a while. Thank you, Osra. We'll see you.
Yeah. All right.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Congresswoman Wagner coming up. Here we go. A little Stevie for you, Sue. Yeah, there you go. More soul in the bumper music. That's what I'm doing here. That's my goal because I just got into a mood over the weekend. We still have audio cut of the day coming up here before the end of the show. I was going to tell you what's coming up tomorrow, but I'm not sure Fred has told me what's coming up tomorrow. Sometimes my brain says, hey, what's going to come up tomorrow? It's going to be great. I don't know what it's going to be yet, but it's going to be phenomenal.
He didn't say
tomorrow afternoon. Well, that doesn't mean that we don't have anything set up, but he likes to put little notes for me because I can't remember things.
I gotcha.
But we'll keep you posted, and it's going to be a fantastic show. We do visit with Alex Rich from Y98 on a Wednesday, so we'll do that. And I'm not going to be here Friday or Monday. Yeah. Going down to Houston to see the grandbabies. So that's the trip.
I'm excited about that.
I'm excited about it, too. I'm not excited about the drive, but I'm excited about the trip.
I don't know.
So looking forward to it.
Good drive can clear your mind.
You know, Dave, I just heard Dave Murray say something about maybe rain on Thursday. I'm going to leave the show after the show on Thursday, go through, stay in Little Rock. I think I'm staying with Bill and Hillary. I haven't gotten my final confirmation.
I don't see why not.
Hey, Ann Wagner is with us this afternoon. Congresswoman, the 2nd District, up for re-election here in the St. Louis area. Great friend of the program, great personal friend. Ann, how are you this afternoon?
I am great, and I want to say happy first day of early voting, Mark.
I understand that I have it on good authority that Mrs. Reardon reached out to you today because she was actually trying to early vote.
Yeah, she stood in the line, she said, for about an hour and a half at Grand Glaze. We've got 6 locations, I'm told, here in the 2nd Congressional District. And what's unique about this early vote is it's one of the first times we have what's called no fault, meaning you don't have to go in and say, I'm sick. I'm out of the country. I work in a, you know, for the, in the military. I mean, you can just go in and vote like any normal person early. So everybody go to stlouiscountymo.gov, stlouiscountymo.gov, and look for those locations and go vote.
You know, I always have said, and I kind of prefer, maybe I'll change my mind here, going on election day and, you know, standing in, usually I'm not in too long of a line. Rockwood Summit has always been, for the last few years, you know, my location. But maybe I will take advantage. You just go get, I think a lot of people are anxious. They just want to cast their vote, get it done with, and then just move on here and wait and see what happens, right?
Well, and you never know what's going to happen on election day, and especially a lot of our elderly, maybe they don't want to stand in a line for a long time. I, you know, today's the first day, so I think you see a big surge. But on election day, I mean, you can, and in Missouri, heck, you don't know in St. Louis if it's going to be, you know, raining or 80 degrees. So if you're standing out there for a couple hours, we don't want you to change your mind. You've got to vote either November 5th. Or you've got 2 weeks to walk in. We won't. For at last, they're not going to make a liar out of you. You can just go in and vote early. So do it.
Well, what are you doing here in the closing weeks? I mean, look, we hear ads here on 97.1 FM Talk. It's not like you're taking your race for granted. I understand there is an opponent, some guy out there. I can't even remember his name. But you're not just resting on laurels right now, are you?
Oh, good heavens, no. We have been out knocking doors. Calling and postcarding voters. We've got been to local businesses. I've got 9 different pieces of campaign mail going out in the district if the USPS can get them delivered in time.
Yeah.
We've got radio ads up. I've done 3 rallies. Gosh, we are, you know, streaming commercials. And yeah, you know, I don't ever take an election for granted. I've got an opponent whose biggest expenditure Mark is on his expense to paying himself a salary, I should say.
And
reimbursements to himself. I mean, what the heck? Well, talk about bilking your donors. You're supposed to be doing the kinds of things that we're doing, which is called voter contact. I mean, this guy is paying himself an annual salary, if annualized, up to $70,000 plus reimbursements. It's pretty insane. So, you know, but we're out there. We take nothing for granted. We're working it hard, and we'll continue as we did, I think, you know, during the 118th Congress. I'm pleased to stand on my record of accomplishments and it's interviews like this that make me go back and take a look at what we've done, actually, and gotten accomplished. So.
Well, you know, it's interesting the way this is closing right now. And I want to—I mentioned this earlier in the show, and I love this quote. I don't know if you know, she's become a good friend of this show and of mine, Selena Zito, who is out there in Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. She was on the stage with Trump when, you know, the assassination attempt took place. But she's on the ground. She's boots on the ground. She talks to people. She reports. She's swung through Missouri. She's swung through every state over the past couple election cycles, and she talks to real people. But she had a column out today, and she was talking with an African-American voter who was a registered Democrat for all her adult life, voted for Obama twice, and is now voting for Trump. Now, I've always been very careful here. I see the numbers increasing with African-Americans. I'm not going to make the case that a majority of African-Americans are going to support Donald Trump. However, what popped in here, and maybe it's impossible to just cull this election down to, you know, a couple of different issues, but there was this quote in here from her that said, farmers, evangelicals, actually, this is from a political pundit type. Farmers, evangelicals, Hispanics, and blacks can all agree on one thing. A cow is a girl, a bull is a boy, and I don't want a politician deciding if I can drink their milk or eat a hamburger, and I better be able to afford to make the choice. I thought that was a great, great line that sums up a lot in this election.
You bet it does. And those are the things that are on people's minds. And you go back to the age-old question, too, which is, are you better today than you were 4 years ago? That's everybody's watching the new Reagan movie out there. And that's the question. And I can tell you what I'm hearing across the district is that people are really struggling to pay their bills. And you've got nearly 40% of Missourians who say that they are struggling on a weekly basis to not just pay their bills, but especially their credit card bill and their grocery bill. And I hate it. because we're seeing credit card debt go way up.
So I say way too high.
Economy is number one issue. Gas pump, inflation, and what we're going to be able to do to unleash our energy security with the liquid natural gas and more fossil fuel, less regulations. It's really exciting. That's number one. Number two, they're sick of the open border, man.
Absolutely.
They are tired of it. They are tired of the fentanyl, the trafficking, all of it. And crime. Crime is big, and they want to be safe. And you got the FBI, who finally, I mean, leave it to the DOJ, finally last week, I couldn't believe when this hit, that they have been saying now that last year's violent crimes
have
gone down.
Yeah.
2.1%. When Mark, they went up 4.5%.
Well, and we knew that. Right.
80,000 net increase. I mean, that's violent.
And we all knew that.
It's rape. And I mean, it's crazy. It's murder. It's armed robbery. I mean, this is insane. So they want the price of things and the cost of living to come down. They want the open border to be closed. They want their neighborhoods to be safe. And they're also tired of these wars all over Europe, all over Israel. They want to feel safe and secure in their own nation. And remember, especially when when Iran and these proxies as they threaten Israel from all sides, they first chant death to Israel, and then they chant death to America. So, this is important stuff, and we've got an administration that has created this horrible, horrible inflation.
But she's going to change. Come on, Anne, you're not being fair. She's going to be completely different. She's moving on. She's a changed candidate, Kamala is.
Yeah,
I don't think you're being fair here.
So she's, when she's going on drinking, beers on Colbert and talking about going on Rogan and trotting out Barack Obama and Michelle Obama. I mean, so I've been out there. Not only have I been campaigning and working here, but I did go. I did two big rallies in battleground states in Arizona and in Nevada. Then I went on to California to work for four of our key candidates out there. The thing with the House is, I don't know if we're going to know on election night. It's going to be close. I think we're going to pick up about 7 seats. But we're looking at places like California and New York, Mark.
I know.
Where the presidential doesn't matter, right? These guys and gals got to do it on their own. So I may head up to Iowa and Ohio too. But I think Trump is looking very strong. He's speaking at the right time.
He's closing strong. Yeah, and she looks terrible right now. And look, you and I, you've been around politics for a long time. So have I. And retail politics are interesting to me, retail politics. And this McDonald's visit is hilarious because they are going apoplectic on the left in the legacy media and the talking heads because they keep saying it's a staged event, blah, blah. Well, of course it's a staged and a managed event. They're running for president. Everything she does is a staged event. But they only have to put, the emphasis on what he does. But it was brilliant. You can see how he's handling it. And if we're being honest, Stan, both you and I, you go back 8 years, we weren't the biggest supporters of Donald J. Trump. But I've come around significantly, and I think he's connecting here in ways that, the other side wishes they were.
Well, and here's the thing. This is, as I say over and over again, it's the policies. It's the policies, the policies, the policies. He's going to restore peace and prosperity. I believe it. He's going to exercise American strength and deterrent on the, foreign affairs and world stage. And, it's authentic. I mean, I loved that he was there in that blue suit with that long red tie and white shirt.
It was pretty awesome.
Serving up French fries. I mean, what else? I assume he sleeps in that. It would be unauthentic for him to, do something else. And you're right about the column today. I've got a farm tour starting tomorrow. I now, in this new district, have picked up some 2,400 farms, family-owned, about 92% of them, and I'm going to be out with soybeans and corn and baby piglets tomorrow and the next day. I mean, we're all over the place, and it's great fun, and it's good to finally have time to be in the district, to be present. The rallies are packed. I'm saying no lonely victories. I'm helping every one of our statewide state reps that are on bubble. Okay, we've got a number of them in both South County and in West County.
Right.
And our state senate candidate too. We're helping out there with
In the David Gregory race, I'm guessing?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You bet.
Yeah, that's a tough
one. 15, you know, Phil Overking. I mean, all these guys. Brad Crist in South County. As I said, we've got a team of eight of between volunteers and some paid interns and such. And we're like a little SWAT team that's out there. And I have been out every Saturday doing this kind of stuff, along with events and rallies and stuff. And it goes on during the week. So I'm excited. I'm excited about the eight bills that were made into law. I mean, we're workhorses, the Ann Wagner team, not show horses. Eight bills, things like bringing down the rape kit backlog and making sure that the crime labs have the resources to do it. Fly Together Act. You know what? When you fly with your young daughter or any grandkid out there, which I know you have one now.
Yes, I'm going to see him this week, actually.
I cannot wait.
And I will send pictures.
Send pics. But they, you know, these airlines are bilking parents just to sit next to their kids. So we got the Fly Together Act done, you know. And then one of the big things is we are a town of a big defense industrial base. And it's not just Boeing. It's all the other small businesses out there. And working through the appropriations amendments and the National Defense Authorization. Remember, I think I was the only one in the St. Louis region that was helping, I can assure you, in this arena. And I bought $2 billion back for F-15s and JDAMs and the T-7 aircraft that's built.
I'm sure Cory Bush did a lot more than that. Come on, Ann.
Yeah,
you know, you're going to take credit for that. Cory did a lot, too, in bringing... Wait a second. No, she didn't do a thing, did she?
No, she changed herself to those JDAMs.
By the way, how about Sam Page handing out little jobs like candy to the staffers that are out of gigs with Wesley Bell and Cory Bush? Isn't that nice of him, King Page?
That's St. Louis County.
Unbelievable. Listen, enjoy the final 2 weeks of campaigning. When all is said and done here and the election is settled, which may be 3 or 4 months from now, we're going to get out and, go grab some adult beverages and a meal like we usually do. But let's let things settle down. But good luck with everything here in the last couple of weeks.
Thanks, Mark. Always great to be with your listeners at Get Out and Vote.
Digging a little deeper here on the Jeff Lynn ELO catalog for the bumper music right now. And I always publish the list and just did at Mark Reardon KFTK on the Twitter. This is always the portion of the show where I'm like, what do I play for audio cut of the day? Sometimes I have something definitive. Sometimes a little hodgepodge.
Playback ready. Now, the audio cut of the day.
Okay, let's do a little hodgepodge here because this McDonald's thing has taken on a life of its own. The lefties are so crazy about this. Here's Tim Walz, who, by the way, are we at the point right now where we can finally admit that this guy should never have been on the national political stage?
I think so.
She actually worked in a McDonald's. She didn't go and pander and disrespect McDonald's workers by standing there in your red tie and take a picture. His policies are the ones that undermine those very workers that were in that McDonald's.
That's crazy.
It is. But here's the thing about her in the McDonald's. There's no proof that she worked in a McDonald's. Now, maybe she did. Okay. But here's the thing.
If so, that picture would be everywhere.
She never mentioned it until like a year ago. Well, because she didn't work in a McDonald's. But listen to AOC. She's upset about this too.
You've got Donald Trump putting on a little McDonald's costume because he thinks that's what people do. They're not trying to empathize with us. They are making fun of us. Yeah. Donald Trump thinks that people who work at McDonald's are a joke. Elon Musk thinks that dangling money in front of a working person is a cute thing to do. They have absolutely no idea what our lives are like.
Who's us?
Who's us? How much money is she making?
Who makes 100 and something?
Thank you.
Are you kidding me that AOC is trying to do an us thing? This is going to be very interesting, and I'm going to be careful here, Sue, because we get our hopes up a little bit too much. Things are trending very well. But, oh, my God, am I going to have the time of my life if this election goes in the right direction? Look, for me, it's sadly a win-win, okay, as a talk show host.
Right.
Because I genuinely am worried about the country. I'm very worried about the country. But if she wins, how is that going to be not great fodder? But I don't want that to happen, but I will say is the most fun that I think a lot of us are going to have is when this election is finally called and if Trump wins, to see AOC's head explode. Tish's head explode here in St. Louis. All the MSNBC types, Joy Behar. Now, again, we're getting our hopes up here, but that will be a glorious moment if, in fact, it happens. Have a great Tuesday night.
Get more at 971talk.com.